The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
The Russian President Vladimir Putin met Turkish and Iranian leaders in Tehran on Tuesday, only his second foreign trip since he launched the invasion of Ukraine in February. Some see it as a PR attempt to show that the Kremlin still has some friends in high places. We're joined by Scott Lucas, Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham and Editor-in-Chief of EA Worldview. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about the reasons for Putin's visit. I mean, he did succeed in getting the nod from the Ayatollah for his war in Ukraine.
Yes, and that was the upside of his PR visit, as you called it, which is that what Putin was seeking overall was to show, look, we're not isolated here. The Russian military has struggled in Ukraine. They failed in their initial objectives in the first phase of the war, had to withdraw from the north. They've made limited gains in the east, but they're now facing a Ukrainian counteroffensive in the south, notably a counteroffensive supported by increasing military assistance, including very powerful rocket systems, U.S.-made rocket systems. At the same time, of course, we've got the sanctions on Russia, which are biting. So this is Putin's way of saying, all right, look, Iran, Turkey, look, these guys like us. We're okay. We can, we're resisting NATO in the West. And the Supreme Leader played his part, bashed the Americans, bashed NATO. But then it went a bit south for Putin. And that's because of a different issue. Turkish President Erdogan kept Putin waiting for almost a minute, but it was a minute that was on film. And Putin looked very unsettled. He was quite frankly, upset at what had happened. Erdogan did that as a part of personal payback. Putin had done the same thing to him a couple of years ago, but he did it in particular because Turkey is threatening to carry out more military operations inside Syria. Now, if Turkey carries out those military operations inside Syria, that challenges the Assad regime, who is backed by Russia. So that sort of upended Putin, who wanted to make sure this was like all harmonious, that there were no disruptions. And what Erdogan was saying is, look, Ukraine's not the only issue on the table, which just exposes that Russia is indeed facing isolation and even complications with those who are willing to talk to it at this point.
Now, the Iranians are not fools. So what was to be gained by them? I mean, are they going to sell drones to Russia, Iranian-made drones? Don't know how good they are, but Russia is short of drones. Are they trying to pull some levers in the nuclear deal? You know, Biden would like to resuscitate the deal that Trump axed. What is their play in all of this?
It's a pact of the isolated, to put it this way. In other words, Iran is actually dealing from a position of weakness right now. The nuclear talks have stalled since March, largely over the issue of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards and their activities in the Middle East, with the U.S. designating them as a terrorist organization. There's no prospect of a breakthrough in those talks. And meanwhile, the Iranian economy is under increasing pressure. It's been under, of course, sanctions for years. That's part of the nuclear talks. But it's got serious internal problems. So the currency is at an all-time low. Unemployment is soaring. Inflation is more than 80% for food items. So if you think we face economic difficulties here in the West, Pat, they've got it a lot tougher in Iran. Mm. And again, they've got very few countries who are willing to bail them out at this point. So Moscow is one that they think, all right, can you at least give us political support, even if the Russians are not in a position to give them much economic assistance?
Was Putin trying to ensure that Iranian oil would not find its way west to replace Russian oil?
Well, that's a complication that they've got, which is he can't stop the Iranian oil being on international markets. So the headline, and this was the one, notable quote achievement, is that there was an agreement that Iran will issue contracts worth $40 billion for Russian firms to develop Iranian oil fields, which is all well and good if it ever comes off. But that masks the fact that because both countries are under international sanctions, they're scrambling to sell oil to the same customers who will buy it from them, notably China. And what Moscow has done since the Ukraine invasion is they have increased the discount for their oil to try to undercut the Iranians, and the Iranians are responding by trying to undercut the Russians. So despite these public, shows of cooperation, which are genuine, there is this prospect that each country needs money from oil, and the other country happens to be a rival in that quest.
Now, back to the war, and it's always hard to lift the fog of war and to find out how serious the casualties are on both sides, because the contention was that Russia was, because of its lack of sophistication in its leadership and also in its weaponry, they were taking casualties that could not be sustained in the long term.
Yeah, I think the best way to break this down, Pat, is to move from what the Ukrainians say to what others say, and then look at the battlefield. Now, the Ukrainian armed forces say that they have killed more than 38,000 Russian troops, destroyed thousands of pieces of Russian armor, hundreds of warplanes and helicopters, more than a dozen warships. Now, those figures may be exaggerated, but if you look at what Western intelligence agencies say, from the U.S. to NATO to the U.K., they all are in accord that Russia's lost about a third of its combat effectiveness. The head of the UK military only a couple of days ago said Russia had suffered 50,000 casualties, that is killed and wounded, in action, and repeated the fact that their combat effectiveness has been degraded. Now, it hasn't been completely stopped, so that means Russia has made limited gains in the east, the Donbass region, but the assessment of the UK and other agencies is Russia will struggle to advance further, and meanwhile, the Ukrainians are preparing for a counteroffensive in the south. Those areas taken by Russia in the opening days of the war. And what is really worrying Moscow, and I think what may be a game changer here is these very advanced medium-range rocket systems, U.S.-made systems that Ukraine has, and now has at least 15. Those systems are being used to hit Russian ammunition depots, to hit logistic positions, and the Russians don't really have an answer to that. I'm not saying this means the Ukrainians win. Nobody wins in this conflict. But I think you're looking at the fact that whereas the Russians are hoping to advance in the east and maybe struggling, the Ukrainians are hoping to regain territories in the south and may be successful, but in a conflict which is going to take at least months more rather than weeks.
Now, meantime, President Zelensky has been acting against those he sees as collaborators and traitors.
Yes. The headline was that he replaced the head of two agencies this week. He replaced the head of the Intelligence and Security Agency, the SBU, a longtime friend of his and his former campaign manager, and he replaced the prosecutor general. Now, he did not say that these two officials were collaborators with the Russians, but he said that more than 60 people in their agencies, more than 60 staff, had collaborated with the Russians, some of them to help the Russians seize territory in the opening days of the war. And there have been a few officials who have been arrested and charged with treason because of this, and some officials who, after the Russians occupied areas, did not quit their jobs, did not resist, but instead started to work with the Russians. And so what Zelensky effectively said is, look, even if you're not collaborators, you had people in your agencies who were, you've got to carry the can for this. I don't think it's a serious disruption to Ukraine being able to resist. Personnel have already been appointed to replace Ukraine. I think it's actually a sign that Zelensky, who has faced a long-term issue of corruption with the Ukraine and has been dealing with it since 2019, is still dealing with that, you know, those issues within the Ukrainian system, even as he's defending Ukraine or defending Kiev against Putin's invasion.
Finally, Scott, Russia's weapons at the moment, they've got gas as an economic weapon, and Germany living in some trepidation that Nord Stream 1 might not fully resume, if at all. And then on the other hand, in the war, in the absence of maybe an effective frontline offensive, just lobbing random rockets at Ukrainian cities.
Yeah.
What does that tell us?
I think that's it tells you that Putin, who's dealing from weakness and isolation, this is his hope. His hope immediately inside Ukraine is to break their will to resist by simply throwing the missiles up. And if they don't hit military targets, they kill civilians. And maybe that will terrorize Ukrainians. Now, that hasn't worked so far. I don't expect it to work in the future. I think the thing to watch is actually the weapon, the energy weapon. Nord Stream 1, which is the immediate issue, is that the Russians, on the pretext of a part that needed to be repaired, cut the gas supply to Germany for, quote, maintenance. Now, it's supposed to resume today, in fact, or tomorrow, sorry, but we don't know at what capacity. Will it be at 40% capacity, 50%, 60%? But, of course, we're in the middle of July. We're in the middle of a heat wave. Where this is really going to bite is if the war continues into the winter. Will Putin be able to disrupt Western populations who say, look, we really care more about our heating than we care about the Ukrainian people? That's his play. So far, it hasn't worked. But as I said, you know, war fatigue does set in, and I do think that's the one hope to get him out of the mess that he's created for himself.
Scott Lucas, thank you very much for joining us once again with a deep analysis of what's going on that war front and beyond.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.